Hey, true believers, it's that time you've been waiting for. Gather around your iPod radio or whatever you're listening to, for Mitch and John are about to go into the power cosmic. Sit back and listen to comic books, toys, movies, and more with those two guys that've got nothing better to do but talk about the stuff that you love. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wake the neighbors, phone the kids. It's time for the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast. I am your host, Mitchell A.S. Halleck, producer of the world's greatest Comic-Con, and that would be Terrific-Con, happening every August at the Mohegan Sun right here in Connecticut, the Constitution State. Hey, we know it's about Comic-Cons because our first three letters are C-O-N, as in Comic-Con. Now, on my other side of the phone, you know him, you love him, you can't live without him. Direct from the pages of Back Issue Magazine, Alter Ego Magazine, and soon to be the Jack Kirby Collector, the man you can find every weekend now as we speak towards the holiday season at the Rain and Flea Market, booth A, as in amazing, 89 through 90. He's expanded. He's gotten so big. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up for the one, the only, you wish you could be him, but there's no way you can, John Cimino.
Hey, everybody, and that's right, Mitch, we've expanded bigger, better, faster, stronger. It's going to be a blast.
You're the $6 million man of flea markets, John, the $6 million man. You're bionic. Hey, speaking of holiday time, and I don't know when folks are listening to this, but we're soon to be on Thanksgiving, and right after Thanksgiving is a traditional capitalistic, disgusting holiday known as Black Friday, when all the stores put out their good merch and start getting good stuff. And we're going to talk today, John, about what are some of the hot items that, you know, if you have a fan in your life, if you have a collector in your life, like, I know my wife was always frustrated for other reasons besides my, but when it came to buying me presents, she was always like, what do I get the man who has everything? And you just can look around the house, and it does look like I have everything stacked up, piles, waiting for the camera crew from the TV show Hoarders to come in here sometimes. But what is a good gift? And we're going to go through three different categories, and I'm going to throw them out to you. You're the toy man. First off, if I was a significant other, a husband, a wife, and my whatever was into comic books and toys, if I came to the Rain and Flea Market this weekend, what would be something unique, superhero-like, toy-like, in your booth that would be an item I would get for a Christmas or a holiday gift? What would you recommend, John?
Well, that's a great question, Mitchie, and I actually have a good answer for that. Two gifts. I have both of them there, but a great gift. It's something that you can get somebody that a grown-up would appreciate, but yet you can still maybe interact with, you can actually still use. And that would be the Hulk, Incredible Hulk Ideal 1979 Smash-Up Action Game. And also there's the Ideal 1979 Spider-Man Web-Spinning Game. Now, why I say those, because, yes, they're old, they're eclectic, they have great, they're great for collecting, and they're old-school, but they're still so much fun to play. I consider the Hulk Smash Up Action Game the greatest tabletop game ever. And we know how we get gifts for grown-ups, and they'll get like Pictionary or something like everybody can play. I'm telling you, the Hulk Smash Up Action Game is so fun because it has all the elements of the Hulk and the unpredictability of the Hulk's rampage.
Well, why don't you walk us through it? What exactly, I don't remember the game. This isn't the Rage Cage. This is something totally different, is it?
Yeah, that's not the Rage Cage from Fun Stuff, what you're talking about. But this is the Smash Up Action Game. So basically what it is, it's you move Bruce Banner, you move Bruce Banner around the board. And what you have to do is, while he's going around the board, he rages, which you put the Hulk. It has this motorized Hulk that you rev up. And then it goes, like, everywhere. So anyways, you put him on the Hulk Rage Meter. So as Banner's going around the game board, he gets rage points, and he gets laboratory points. And when you get the laboratory points, you build these labs. You try to build your labs, and you survive the Hulk's rampage. So, and you can get shields and all that stuff. So anyways, so while Banner's going around, the Hulk eventually rages up, and when he becomes the Hulk, you rev up the Hulk, you put him in the middle of the game board, and then he goes nuts, and you try to hope your laboratory that you built survives the smashing. And you can put, and it, you, like I said, you have little shields you can put up. It's so much fun, and it's so, like, you can play it for hours. And it's, like, it's unpredictable, because when you rev up the Hulk, you can't ask for anything better. To this day, it is still the greatest board game ever.
Now, these little laboratories you make, I assume they're made out of cardboard, like a house of cards?
No, they're made out of plastic, and they're five pieces. Like, you know, it's one wall, the second wall, the third wall, the fourth wall, and then you put the ceiling on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to survive two Hulk rampages. But what else is also cool about it is that they use the old school panels. Like, they're all, they have Tales to Astonish 93. They actually have the panels of the Hulk fighting the Silver Surfer, mm-hmm. from that classic issue with Marie Severin drew. And then you also have the Nightcrawler, not the Nightcrawler from the X-Men, but the Nightcrawler that predated him that was in the Hulk. But that's what I thought when I was a kid. That was so cool. Like, they're old. It's all 70s Hulk, but it's so much fun. Mitch, I'm telling you, when you come over next time,
we're gonna play it
together. I'll bring the game and we'll play.
I swear, I think I remember this. Now, you just mentioned there was a Spider-Man version. What is that? A similar game, except you build
similar, but it's not as unpredictable and fun as the Hulk. But it's fun nonetheless. It's like Spider-Man. It's called the web spinning action game. The boxes look unbelievable. Just the boxes alone, because they're huge, have great art on them. But what happens is, like, the Spider-Man has like a thread in him, and while these villains are chasing him around the the game board, that web spinning thing, like the strands of yarn, whatever that's behind it, like, you have to trap the villains in it. So when whoever's the first to trap all three villains, which the Green Goblin, the Rhino, and the Lizard, and they're chasing you around. But what's great about it too is they're like 3D. I mean, they're plastic. The figures look great. Like, you know, like, and it's like you build it, and it's just awesome because they're fighting on top of these buildings. But they're just great. They're just so much fun. Those are the perfect games.
Now, did those hold up well? I mean, it's been, how old are these games? 35, 40 years old?
Why it holds up well is because of the unpredictability of it, the fun factor. Like, there's nothing you can do about this. You rev up the Hulk, you put him in the middle, while it's going, and you put him in the middle of the game board.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, are you getting, it's still so much fun.
So in this world we live in, of video games and Xboxes and PlayStations and all that stuff, you're trying to tell me that a simple cardboard and plastic game from 1978, maybe, 77, is more entertaining than anything that we could do with modern technology?
Well, case in point, that's a great question. Case in point, Mitch, I had my daughter and some of her friends over my house, right? Mm. And her friends are like, you know, they're all like 10, 11, 10, 9, 10, and 11. Now, I said, hey, you guys want to play games? And then we took the game out. There was Sorry, and there was that game. We played Sorry first because they didn't think they were going to like the game. But my daughter even vouched for me. Oh, no, play this game. But kids, we played that game, the Incredible Hulk Special Action Game, literally for 2 hours. They just kept wanting to play because it's so much fun. Sometimes the Hulk can get behind the shield and it, like, bounces off. Because you have to build, like, it has this, like, plastic border around the game piece, you know, that you have to push in there. But it's, you get to use your hands and stuff, and you build. But these kids love that game so much. And I said to myself, here's kids that have no, they don't have any value in the comics whatsoever, but they know who the Hulk is. But when they played that game, they just wanted to keep playing it. And those are kids in sixth grade.
Well, that's something. Now, how did you acquire this game? This isn't your personal thing. In one of travels?
I've had many of them through the years. The first time I ever got it was back in Christmas, Jesus, when I was a young kid. And I remember I had it for a few months, and I remember bringing it over my friend Charlie Tibbetts, his house, across, like, he was up the street, and I somehow lost the Hulk, the revving Hulk, because you can just use the revving Hulk and you can just play with it. You can use those with matchbox cars. You could build things, and you can rev them up, and it'll smash through the stuff. It's so fun. I still see some of those Hulk. They go, the loose Hulk ones go for about $50 on.
Really? TV. How much is this game? How much is this? Okay, so I'm at the random flea market this week, and I got cash in hand. How much am I buying a decent version of this to play, not just to keep on my shelf and you know, stare at it like?
$300
Oh, $300? My God, I might as well go buy an Xbox, for God's sakes.
Well, you get what you pay for, yeah. And the funny thing is, a few years ago, they were only going for, like, you know, I have to admit, they are open. They are, I mean, they're unopened. They're still sealed. So a still sealed one will get you $300. And unsealed, you still got to pay about $100. But like I was originally saying, that a few years ago, they were going between $50 and $100 sealed, but not anymore. They go for about $300 now sealed. So I only have two of them currently, one of each, and they're both sealed. So this could be a $600 drop for fun.
So if you're a Hulk collector or a Marvel fan, this would be an ideal gift to give somebody for the holidays or a birthday present. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. The one that I had open that I used to play with people at my house, a friend of mine came over, and then he offered me $200 so if he could take it. And I didn't want to do it, but he was a good friend of mine, and so I sold it to him, the one that I had that I used to always play with people.
All right. Well, so there's a good idea for somebody, the collector in your life that likes Marvel. There was a lot of those board games, wasn't there? I have a Captain America one I bought off of you. It does not have the comic book that came with it, though. On the box, it says it includes it. It's from the 60s, I think.
Yeah, that's the one. Mick, what was so cool about that one I got? I think Tales of Suspense 93 was the comic that was in there, or 83. I can't remember which one, but it came with the free comic, and usually you can't. The comic is worth now more than the game, obviously. But what's so cool about that game board is the Destroyer is on that. It's a Thor villain that is in a Captain America game. It's like, why the hell would the Captain America be fighting the Destroyer? It's cool. It's a Jack Kirby Destroyer.
They were playing fast and loose back then. They didn't really care about continuity and who was in whose.
But there are a few games, like I have also.
There's a Fantastic Four game. Do you have that one?
There's Spider-Man in the Fantastic Four, and then there's the Hulk in the Fantastic Four.
Yep.
There's Captain America and the Falcon game that came out in 76.
Well, I don't remember that one.
The Marvel Superhero Strategy game. There's another Hulk game. The Hulk, it's another Rampaging. It was based off the cartoon in the 80s.
Yeah.
In the early 80s, so it's from 1980. And then there's a few that are overseas ones that I have, too, from Britain. The Hulk versus the Abomination game. There's another superhero game. But I also have the Batman and Robin game from 1966, which is, no, 65, which is actually predates
the TV show.
And then I have the 66 game. Yeah. I also have the Thunderball. I have Roger Moore Thunderball.
Oh, James Bond now. Yeah, it seems everything had a game. I had a King Kong board game from 1976 when they made the movie, and it was on the World Trade Center. And I thought you had to build the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had that, right? Oh, you don't have one of those for sale?
No, I don't. But you have to get there's the King Kong in the middle of there.
Yeah.
And it goes up like the top. You know what else is another great game if we're still staying on game? Do you remember the Godzilla game that came out in the early 70s?
No, I don't remember that.
What was cool about it is you had these ships, and you would have to try to spin it around, and they had to go around a few times, but while you're spinning it around, this Godzilla would jump out, like literally, like scoop out and try to bite your, and if it bit your ship, you had to remove it. But you didn't know when it was going to come up. That was a great freaking game. Those 70s games were great.
I remember the Jaws game, which was kind of like
that. Was great too.
The mouth, you had to pull pieces out of it, and then if the jaws collapsed, you lost, that type of thing.
Yeah, that one. And then there was also the there was a lot of those games. They make games for everything, but there was a lot of they really put some time in thinking of those games, like what you had to do. Some of them were terrible, of course, but some of them were really fun.
Yeah.
Remember the Aliens one, the Target game? It was on that like cardboard that what was that? Those that hard cardboard.
It was almost press board. Press board. It's called.
Yeah. But there were okay. You opened it up, and it was a big alien, and you shot it. It had like a. It was almost like a target thing. And you had
Yeah. I remember that from the movie Aliens in 78. Yeah.
That's a weird thing
because that's a rated R movie and they're making a game on it for kids.
Kids got so into it. But yeah, those are some.
All right, so there's that. I thought you were going to say like an action figure or something, but I get you. You're talking about something the whole family can play, and that's kind of cool. So now I'm back at the Rain and Flea Market. I've already got my aunt Petunia. I got her the Hulk game. Now I'm looking at a comic book. And she's a Marvel fan from the 70s, the Bronze Age. What right now would you think is so hot that would be an eye-opener on Christmas morning for her to open it up? What number one?
Number 13.
Would that be Carol Danvers?
Absolutely.
Now why? She's not a huge part in that story, is she?
Nope. She's just kind of in the background. Yeah, written by, of course, Roy Thomas. But that is a great gift because she's going to be the hottest thing in the world maybe in about two, three years.
When the Captain Marvel movie comes out with Brie Larson, I believe the actress's name is. So what? But how is the story? I mean,
And it's still affordable. It's like in the $300 range.
$300?
It'll kill you. But you can still get one between $200 and $300.
Now, okay, before they announced the Captain Marvel movie, what was that book really going for?
Wait, say that again?
Before they announced the Captain America movie, what was Marvel Super Heroes 13 going for prior to that?
Oh my God, before that? I mean, at least in good condition, let's say before the whole Carol Danvers thing was going on, she was still kind of hot. They're talking about maybe a
$70 book. The
$70
book, yeah. $80. So how fast is it when they announce these movies that these books just jump in price in the speculator market?
It's funny you say that because case in point, the first Mr. Sinister.
Yeah.
The one that's going to, because he's going to be in the Logan movie. And the X-23, that was NYX number 3, I have one for $1,000 now. But I was talking
Wait.
That was like a $5 comic book last year. And then at the end of X-Men, when they said something sinister.
Yeah.
Remember the end of the X-Men?
Yeah, I saw it.
That
Apocalypse.
That became a $60 book literally overnight.
But go back a second. The X-23 thing, $1,000? What are you talking about?
9.8 can get you for like, yeah, I have a 9.8. It's a little less than $1,000, but I'm sure they can go for $1,000. Because she's going to be the little girl in the Logan
movie. Yeah, I've heard.
But it's those movies, right when things come out, they just boom. They just boom up, and people just want them. Like the Luke Cage one was crazy. And the Iron Fist, that Marvel Premiere 14 is going nuts. And that's not also the hottest, one of the hottest books in the world still is the Moon Knight, that Werewolf by Night.
I know. I just tried getting a copy of that from you, but it was a little...
And I had a terrific con this year. I sold 6 copies of them. But they ranged from $1,000 to $250 was the cheapest one, which was looked like one that was like selling a toilet.
Yeah,
sold them for $250, and I sold one, the highest one was for like $1,000.
Now,
I sold 6 of them at your show.
Now, that's always been a hot book, because I always wanted to get that. I mean, since I was a kid, I always loved Moon Knight. I always made a point to try to find that book, but there was no eBay back then, so I just let it go, and now it's gotten out of the price range for cheapo Mitch here. But the thing of it is, what was so, besides the first appearance of Moon Knight, what was that so scarce? Was it a low press run, or it was a bad book?
First thing, the monster comics were always like they were always kind of hip, you know, like Tomb of Dracula, Werewolf by Night. The Mummy is the only one that didn't quite make it, but for that reason, the cover is awesome too because you have it was Gil Kane art,
yep.
And the distribution was low on those comics. They weren't high, especially think about who was collecting Werewolf by Night 32 in the 30s. At that time, and that was the 70s, like the early 70s, and at that time too, comics were at a low.
Yeah.
So you got to figure. So the distribution—I don't know how many are out there, but the distribution was low, and how many just got destroyed and thrown away, and all that. So I mean, it's just kind of those weird appearances, just like Tomb of Dracula 10 with another What was it?
The Blade?
Blade, the first Blade in Tomb of Dracula 10. That's another one that it's always tough to get. Always tough to get.
How much does that go for on average in a really good
condition? That one, it's in the same, it's not as hot as the Moon Knight one, but we're talking about like a good one in really good shape can get close to $500.
Oh.
That's pretty good.
So what?
I don't know how much the 9.8s and all that stuff can go, but that's when stuff gets ridiculous.
What?
I usually kind of base it on like raw copies, like high grade raw copies. I'm sure you can get 400, 500, 300,
yeah.
All in that range.
Now, what characters, I mean, they announced an Inhumans movie, and then this week they said they're going to make it a TV series. Has that gone up and down in value since the announcements?
Yep, that's perfect you say that, because when it was first, about 2-3 years ago, when it was first said that the Inhumans were going to be a movie, that Fantastic Four 45, it went ballistic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a few copies and all that. You know, it's always, I got to wholesale some of those. It's not as hot anymore. But the 52, the Black Panther one, that one always has great legs on it.
Yeah, but it's not like a $1,000 book, is it?
No, but I'm sure if you get one CGC'd in the high grade one, you're going to be paying a couple grand for it.
So
like,
it's really
like a nine or something, I'm sure.
There's no math, there's no formula to this that makes one book that X-23 is in worth $1,000 where another book that has the Punisher is not $1,000. There's no rhyme or reason behind that?
No. It's just all it's funny how you mentioned the Punisher. Like, let's just face Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 129.
Yeah.
For me, that has to be one of the most asked about books. I can have Amazing Fantasy 15s and all this other stuff right around it, and I'm always asked about 129. Even asked about that more than the 181, Hulk 181. That's asked about a lot too, but that 129 gets more exposure. Maybe it's the cover. I know everybody loves the Punisher, but in all my years of doing this, Spider-Man 129 is asked about more than any other comic.
Now, do you get a lot of DC people at the booth? Say, I'm coming to the show, and
yeah,
my Aunt May.
Get DC, yeah. DC isn't as hot as Marvel. There are some DC books, and I'm not going to say that don't. Like DC, like right now, the first Deathstroke, that new Teen Titans number 2,
yeah.
George Pullman, that's a hot book, too. That always goes, but and I just recently sold the House of Secrets, 93, 92?
The Swamp Thing? Yeah.
And here's something I never knew. Did you know that the first Swamp Thing, that issue, that's Louise Simonson on the cover of that?
Oh, the girl screaming? That's Louise? I didn't know.
Yeah, that's her. I never knew that. And who told me that? Some creator told me that. I forget who it was. But, yeah, and I was like, God, I never knew that. But that's always hard to get, too. That's a hard-to-get book, and I was glad to have it for a little while, but I sold it quick.
All right, so I've got now on my shopping list, my fictional, hypothetical Christmas list, I've already picked up the Hulk game. I've picked up the Carol Danvers, Marvel Superheroes number 13. Is there now, clothing is kind of hard and awkward because, you know, obviously if someone has worn it, it might not be that great. But is there a vintage? Did you ever come across some vintage clothing that you sell? Anything from the
the
Marvel
stuff? I have a lot of the vintage 60s Marvel's clothing, but I don't sell it.
Like what? The T-shirts?
It's so hard to find.
The T-shirts they used to sell for $1.50?
The T-shirts and the sweatshirts. I even have Mikey Gabanaro giving me a lot of pressure to sell that stuff, but I don't want to because it's not like I need the money, but it's like those are hard to come by. And you remember those shirts, right, Mitch?
Yeah, they were ads in the back of the book.
Hardest one to get is the cowboy one.
Is that the cowboys on it?
Kid and Kid Colt, Outlaw, all those guys?
No, what was the Hulk one? It was a double-sided shirt, wasn't it? Like, here comes the Hulk, and on the back he's pulling
it. There was two Hulk shirts. Okay, there was the actual T-shirt,
yeah.
And then there was the sweatshirt. They made the Hulk sweatshirt, and they made the Thing sweatshirt. And they all had a little joke behind them. For the Hulk one, it says, the Hulk is coming through. Something like that.
Yeah.
And then on the back, it showed him dragging a little, like a little toy bunny or something that he's rolling. And the Thing one was when you look at the back, it's his back, but on his butt it says, "If you're reading this, you're too darn close." I remember that.
And you get those mint in package? I mean, how do you come across something?
I actually have them in the package. Those things can go for about $1,000 pop. That's tough. Those shirts, even loose, can go for about $500 each. The sweatshirts are tough. They're great.
Now, how do you know they're the authentic deal and somebody just didn't make a reprint of it?
Well, because I do, Mitch. That's all I can say. And you can look at the tags. Always the tags. Because they made the Spider-Man. Okay, here's something to learn for any collectors out there. There's a Spider-Man. I think they were made by Allison Shirts. I could be wrong on that name, but it could be Allison. But they made a Spider-Man one and had the famous Ditko. They had a cool Ditko image on it. But there's a Spider-Man one that came out before all the shirts came out, which was the exact same Spider-Man shirt. But I think the logo of the Allison on the tag is red, and all the rest of them are blue. So if you ever have one that has the red tag, I'm sure it's red, then you'll that is the one that actually predates the other Spider-Man one and all the other Marvel shirts. That is a tough find. I don't know how much that thing is going to be.
Have you ever seen one?
Excuse me?
Have you ever seen one in yourself?
Yes, I did see one. I don't have that one. I have the other one, the one with the blue tag. There's some older Spider-Man collectors or vintage Marvel. There's some bigger vintage Marvel collectors than me out there, but that have that. Yeah, and they're in. There's photos of these things in like those books and stuff. But yeah, if you can get that one with the red tag, whew, you got yourself a good piece of memorabilia. All that memorabilia goes for money, though. All that 60 stuff goes for mega money because it was so expendable. You know, Marvel was just trying to keep up with DC during that time, and nobody really wanted them, so they went with those little companies. All that gumball toys, those gumball charms, and those little comics, those are the stuff that goes for money because they were so, you know.
I remember going to get these little plastic cups in the 80s, and they were little. They looked like little plastic shot glasses. And what you did is there was a sticker that came with it, and you were supposed to take the sticker and put it on the little plastic cup. And these were in the gumball machines, and they were like 25 cents.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember my mom giving me quarter after quarter, and instead of going to play video games, I was trying to get the whole set. And I would always get Thor, but they had Spidey and all that stuff. Now I don't even know who saved that crap. I mean, it was a.
I actually have a few of that stuff. But it's funny you said that because I remember when I was a kid and they had the superhero stickers, and and then they also had magnets, and then they had the Hulk hand. It was like this plastic hand that kids could put over their hand. You know, like it looked like a.
Well, they have those. They have those. They have the Hulk hands nowadays. I mean, I had my kids have a series.
But this was in a gumball machine. It was not like a plastic hand. It was like literally like you were putting like a sandwich bag over your hand.
Oh, like a hand puppet thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a hand thing, but they were 25 cents. And Mitch, I remember when I was a kid, you would think I hit the lottery. I begged my mom for quarters, and she gave me 3 quarters, and I wanted the Hulk sticker. I put the first one in. It was Spider-Man. I was like, oh. I put the second one in. I got a Wonder Woman magnet. And then the third one I put in, I got the Hulk sticker. You would think I hit the lottery. You thought I would hit, like, I won $1 million. I was so freaking happy with that. But, yeah, those gumball machines. I remember those little shot glasses. There was also a Fantastic Four one. There was a thing. I remember. There was a lot of those.
Yeah.
Those are worth money. Those are worth a lot of money. It was always those things that people would have, and then they would throw away.
Maybe those would be good stocking stuffers. It's almost been a half hour now. So I say we got Grandma and Aunt Petunia a lot of nice presents this holiday season, thanks to the random flea market and your expertise on what's a good gift. If there was one present that little Johnny could open up and travel through time, what would he like to find under his tree this year?
Mitch, I think you know the answer to that. It was the Mego Stretch Hulk.
Yeah, you got it. The eternal gift, the gift that keeps on giving. You never get tired of that.
Right, but the best gift I got, and I remember almost dropping when I saw it, was the Hulk Rage Cage you just mentioned. When I ripped that thing open and I saw that thing in the in the flesh. That was the second best thing I ever got.
Simpler times, John. Simpler times.
And what about you, Mitch? What about you?
I wish I could get that Spider-Man set we talked about, the Marvel Universe, with the little cardboard cutout things again, and just put it together. Remember you? I don't know what you. Who made it? Marks or somebody? Who was that?
What? You're talking about the AMSCO Marvel World?
Yes. That would be a nice gift because I liked displaying stuff when I was a kid. I liked building things like that and just looking at it, and moving around, and that was a fun toy. And it was easier probably to store than a lot of the good stuff.
We talked about that before, man.
Yeah,
that was having the whole Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I didn't have that one. I only had the Spider-Man Daily Bugle set and stuff, but I didn't know there was another one that had all the characters. I'd say that would be a good gift for little Mitchie. And that's it. That's all I would really want there, though. So anyway, people are going to be stuffing their birds and eating this stuff while they go out there. Maybe they're listening to this on the way to the mall to go buy some stuff. Is there any modern day stuff that you would recommend for people that can't go back in time or make it to the flea market? What should people buy nowadays? Anything?
Well, I gotta admit, there are cool stuff that's out there, but they don't impress me. But you know, I see when I sometimes go over like friends' houses and I see their kids and I look at their kids' toys and I'll see like a figure or something. I don't know. I just think there's so much stuff going on with these figures now and stuff that it's just like the simplicity is missing.
Yeah.
But you know, they're all basically the same because the same company puts it out.
Hasbro.
Back in our days, there was many companies putting out different things. So you got a great like different variety of like,
right,
let's just say Spider-Man. You know, they're just different. When you get a toy figure, it's all the same line. It's all toys. Because Marvel owns all that stuff, so. But I don't know. I would still try to get a. I don't even like how the Hulk looks anymore in all these figures. It doesn't look right to me. I get my daughter stuff. I have to admit, here's one. The Gail Godot, Barbie just put out earlier this year. They put out a Barbie line. I mean, Barbie put out like Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman from the Superman Batman movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Superman and Batman one was okay, but the Gail Godot, like Wonder Woman, was phenomenal. I have to admit, my daughter ripped that thing open, and it looked really good. That was a great figure. $40, but it was a good figure.
Well, there you go. That's another episode coming to an end here. Happy holidays, Thanksgiving. We'll be back with some more stuff, some spotlights on some creators. I got a ride coming up with the one and only Jerry Ordway, so you'll be hearing from Jerry. Sooner or later, we're going to get some of your friends on the show. It would be nice to have Gio Russo or even your friend Art Balthazar, right? Am I saying it right?
Oh, my God, that would be great.
You talk about Migos. Yeah. So that's about it. So anyway, what do we always say when the show comes to an end, John?
And that's that.
And that's that. See ya. This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.